I'm Marty Moscowain. Welcome to Radio Times. One of the first things a parent learns about their newborn baby is whether it's a girl or a boy. And if they send out a birth announcement, chances are the sex of the child is in big bold letters. It's a boy. It's a girl. But a small number of children are what is called gender nonconforming, meaning their behavior and identity does not match their anatomy or societal expectations of males and females. Today on Radio Times, understanding the needs of transgender children. And we have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. They are the co-directors of the Gender and Sexuality Development Clinic at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Nadia Dauschen is also a faculty member at the hospital's Policy Lab, serves as a director of its adolescent HIV services in the Division of Adolescent Medicine, and an assistant professor of pediatrics at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. Nadia Dauschen, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're welcome. And Linda Hawkins, besides being co-director, is also an associate adjunct professor at the Center for Sexuality Studies at Widener University, which is just outside of Philadelphia. Linda Hawkins, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having us.
I feel we need to begin our conversation with an anatomy lesson. You know, you think you understand this stuff, and then when you begin to think about it, especially in light of understanding transgender children, I think we do need to start with an anatomy lesson and even some terms. And perhaps I can put them to you, Nadia Dauschen, talking about things like biologic sex, gender identity. Tease those apart for us.
Absolutely. So thank you for what you said in the great introduction that you did that gives us a good idea for things. So when a young person is born, they're usually assigned a biologic sex, which is based on the anatomy that people see, whether there's a penis or a vagina that would help them define whether the young person is going to be called male or female. But what we see is that many times young people do not necessarily identify inside, in their brain, in their heart, as what we see in their genitalia when they're born. So those young people who have a sense of their gender as different from that biologic sex that they were defined at birth, that's what we call being gender nonconforming or transgender.
So the idea, Linda, is that in a sense one's identity is different or conflicts perhaps with one's anatomy?
Exactly. It's a great way of describing it. And what we know from the research in our work with young children is that as a young person is growing and, you know, moving into 2 years old, 3 years old, parents, communities, other family members are giving cues or clues to that child based on their assigned sex of how they should be behaving, how they should be behaving as a boy, what toys they might be playing with, how they should be reacting to different situations in life. Those are some of the things we call gender norms and gender cues or clues. And what typically happens is that a young child moves along quite smoothly. So their assigned sex matches with their internal gender identity, and all of those cues match. The toys match, the responses from parents and interactions match. For the young people who Nadia and I get to serve, they don't match as clearly. So it might be that a young child is assigned female, but keeps gravitating towards more boy things in our society, gender typically boy things. And those are the kiddos who just start to express some difference. And parents come to us saying, my daughter or my son isn't acting like my other sons or my other daughters, or I'm noticing some differences, again, based on those gender norms and gender cues.
And I want to pick up on that. Let me go back to you, Nadia. Is this something new? Transgender, especially if we're talking about transgender children, is this a new phenomenon?
So this is absolutely not a new phenomenon that people are transgender or will have a variety of gender identity that may be different from their biologic sex. We've seen depictions of this in many other cultures and other countries for hundreds of years. I think that right now is sort of the first time that we're having more of an awareness of this occurring in young people. And because of all of the changes that are occurring in our society, that we have so many more depictions of famous transgender adults, that it's leaving the language and the ideas open for people to understand what it means to be transgender, and that if you're a transgender adult, you also were a transgender child. So now we're starting to recognize these things earlier. And oftentimes it's happening as early as 3, 4, or 5 years old, that because that's when young people are really starting to develop a sense of their gender identity, that their parents or they are noticing that they are different, and people are asking for help that early.
Linda, it looks like you wanted to say something.
Yeah, and in my experience as a mental health provider for LGBT and teens and young people in Philadelphia and other areas, I've noticed that that question comes to me: are there more trans children and teens now? And the reality is that, just like Nadia said, no. And these were the young people who had depression, who had anxiety, who may have had disordered eating, may have had substance abuse, and nobody could really get at the core of their depression or their anxiety. Mm. And when I, in my research and looking at gender identity development among trans youth, there's this point where many young people will say, I knew that I was different, but I didn't have any language for it. It might be that there was an assigned male who felt, well, I'm different from other kids, so that must mean I'm gay, because that's the next step of difference in our society right now.
Yeah.
And then trying to find a place or a home or an identity within that world, they continue to feel different. And those are the young people who very courageously are coming out, originally for some of us in their teens, but then even younger. There's this key of language equaling identity and validation.
Well, I'm curious about what would a 5-year-old transgender boy say? I mean, how does, or girl, what do they say, Linda?
Words I hear typically originally come from the parents. They come to us and say, we're really worried because Joey said, I'm not supposed to be a boy. Or,
I mean, literally that,
yes,
direct.
That direct.
Clear.
When will I wake up a girl, mommy? And these are words from children. Their genuine concern, discomfort, and the parents come to us really clearly saying, I don't know what to do with this. And the relief when they get to us to say, it's going to be okay, we'll figure this out together.
But I wonder whether, kids are tomboys, you know, girls sometimes are tomboys. Sometimes kids go through kind of a phase of trying to figure out who they are. How do you determine, Nadia, what's a phase and what's real?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question that a lot of people are thinking about. So when somebody has varied gender expression, so say a young girl or a young boy is doing things that we expect for the opposite sex, like the way that they wear their clothes or the way that they wear their hair or the activities that they want to do, if those things are viewed as being from the opposite gender, they will, you know, often get positive or negative reinforcement for that. And sorry, I forgot what your question was.
Well, no, just sort of trying to figure out, I mean, is this a phase? Or I mean, how do you determine whether a child is just trying to figure something out or whether they really are transgender?
Right. So, you know, what we find is that there are many young people who have this very gender expression who will grow up to be transgender. There are many others who will grow up to be what we call cisgender, identifying as the same gender as the sex that you were assigned at birth, and be heterosexual. And then there are some people that will grow up and be cisgender and be gay. And so there's a whole range of things that will happen for young people who are gender nonconforming. And whether they will become transgender or not as adults is something that's hard to know the first time that a young person is expressing this varied gender. And so one of the big things is to know what happens to this young person over time. And we talk about the ideas of insistence, persistence, and consistence. And those things over time will show us that somebody is more likely to become transgender as an adult.
Well, I'm curious to you, Linda. Let's say a child says, you know, I'm a little girl says I'm a little boy or some version of that. What do you suggest parents say? How do you respond to something like that?
I encourage parents to say, I love you, and I'll always love you, and tell me more about that. And with that, the prescription of love, that's the only prescription you get at that point, is listening. listen to your child. They, as you said so clearly, young people know who they are very young. And once they have the language to articulate it, even if it's, I'm not sure who I am, but I don't feel right in this body. Keeping open that line of love and listening is exactly what I tell parents. I also encourage parents that they're in charge. Parents are parents. Parents setting healthy boundaries for their children like they would with any child. Just because a little boy says they want to be a girl doesn't mean they don't eat their vegetables. And with that, listening, loving, and setting those healthy boundaries and as any good parent should.
Well, and I'm sure loving parents have to struggle with this as well. For whatever, we have expectations, we have fantasies, we have ideas about our children when we think that they're a boy or they're a girl, whether we like it or not. And you have to begin to take a look at those expectations and fantasies.
We do. And I in my work, I see that as a conversation to be had with both the child or teen and the parents. With the child or teen, helping them understand that the dreams their parents had based on their assigned sex started potentially when still in the womb. So the amount of time that parents need to get used to a new idea, and even if they're coming along quickly, there's time. And for that young person to figure out, How are they going to rewrite their own life script? What is that life script once they've been able to find the language and speak their own true voice of their true gender? What are the potentials of who they can become?
I'm curious, Nadia, about if anyone understands yet the cause, the reason for transgender children. Is it something in utero? Is it hormonal? Is it brain chemistry?
Yeah, so
we know.
So we really don't know. And I think there are a number of ways of thinking about this. I think some people think that this is just a variant of gender expression, that, you know, we in our society have placed this binary of male and female, and that some people, regardless of the sex that they were assigned at birth, may have a different idea about what their gender is, and that these are all normal variants. There are other people that think that someone having a transgender identity might be due to intrauterine hormonal exposure or even hormonal or androgen exposures that happen after the time of birth. There are also people who think that there may be structural differences in the brains of people who are transgender. One of the sort of gurus in this area who has started probably the longest running clinic for children and adolescents who are transgender in the United States in Boston, Norm Spack, the way that he likes to think about it, which I like as well, is that this is a disorder of sexual development of the brain. So the body has failed to develop in the way that the brain is. So it's not that there's a problem with your brain, it's a problem with your body.
Let's take a very short break. I want to pick up on that, talking with Nadia Dowshin and Linda Hawkins. They are co-directors of the Gender and Sexuality Development Clinic at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. We're talking about transgender children. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. The Children's Hospital of Philadelphia is one of several healthcare institutions across the country providing comprehensive medical and psychological care for transgender children. That's what we're talking about on Radio Times in this hour of the show with Linda Hawkins and Nadia Dowshin. They are co-directors of the Gender and Sexuality Development Clinic at CHOP. And we have open lines at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email. I see some emails coming in, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. During the break, I was tossing to you. I'll say it on the air now. I'll begin with you, Linda. Are we talking, though, about a disorder? Is it in the DSM, for instance?
Well, I'll say yes and no. Yes, it's in the DSM, and my working experience is that it's not a disorder. The language within the DSM over the recent increase to the DSM-5 has shown the progression of language that focuses on reducing the disorder language and increasing more of the spectrum, as Dr. Dowshin and Nadia spoke about, the shift in language from gender identity disorder to gender dysphoria. The dysphoria is really focusing on what we've been talking about this morning, which is a difference in feeling, a discomfort in feeling that individuals have between their mind, their heart, and their body. That dysphoria is very real. And if you'll notice, the language, the diagnostic language of disorder has been removed. What I like about the shift in that language is it gives us a foundation through which to diagnose and to provide then resources and needed support, while also saying we're progressing as a world of diagnostic information and understanding.
Nadia, is there any way to know what percentage of the population might either identify or believe that they are transgender?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And the early numbers that we have really come from studies where people actually presented to medical care and went through a transition, and these are adults. So those numbers are quite low, 1 in 10 to 20,000. When we now think about who is it that has a gender identity that is different from the sex they were assigned at birth, in more population-based studies recently, we're seeing that those estimates are probably way off, and it's much higher than what was originally thought. It's probably something more like on the range of 0.3 to almost 1% of the population that is gender nonconforming or gender variant, transgender in some way.
Is this part of our broader and bigger understanding about sexual identity, gender identity, you know, the fact that there are so many people on this spectrum between male and female? You're nodding your head, Linda.
Yes, I think that the you used the word earlier when we were talking the evolution of our society and accepting variations on sexuality, variations on gender is the foundation for which many of these opportunities and options are coming to our understanding, and therefore helping people to be themselves and feel better about who they are. I feel like in my work over the 17 years with young people, 10 years ago, folks really started to open up their minds to the LGB part of sexual orientation and who we are as humans. And the gender world, the T part of all of that, is following. And we're about 5 years behind with that. But just looking at how, even in the media, portrayals of folks who are transgender or have varying presentations of gender expression and identity are now not the villains in movies. They are they're the champions. And there is not a subset of professions that are for trans people, but there are multiple professions. So I really see the acceptance of our LGB, lesbian, gay, bisexual, peers being opening many doors that trans folks can now walk through together.
Is it possible, though, and this is not children so much, but for adolescents and for adults, that you could be trans and straight? Nadia?
Absolutely. So I think, you know, one of the things that people are sometimes trying to understand is what is the difference between gender and sexuality and how are these things linked? And in our experience, what one's gender identity is not necessarily connected at all to what their sexuality is. So, you know, I take care of many young people who are gender variant, and I talk to them about their gender. And then we also spend time as an adolescent medicine doctor. I'm talking to them about all the things that are going on in their life. So I'm asking them about who they are attracted to and their relationships. And I ask them, you know, so what would you say that your sexuality is? Do you have a label for it? And many of them will tell me, oh, well, you know, I was born male, but I identify as female and I'm attracted to other females. So I guess I'm gay. And then some other kids will tell me that same story and say, no, I'm straight. And then many others will tell me I'm pangender or I don't have a label. So, you know, who one is attracted to really is independent from who it is they feel they are in their gender.
In fact, I'm looking at something that we got from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia about the various names, gender fluid, gender binary, gender queer, the third gender, agender, ambigender, gender non-binary. I mean, is it we need to live in this world now of just not assuming that people are either male or female?
Yes, and the not assuming part is the key.
Yes.
So when I have the pleasure of teaching counselors, therapists, doctors, and nurses how to be supportive of providing competent care for LGBT young people. I always encourage folks to hear what the young person has to say. If they say I'm pangender or I'm third gender, the first statement is, thank you. Thank you for trusting me to share that information. And the next statement is always, now tell me what that means for you.
Right.
Tell me what that means for you, whether it comes to somebody's gender identity and their sexual orientation. For a young person who says, I'm gay, the next question, well, first say thank you. And then the next question is, so tell me what that means for you, because it can mean so many different things for many children and youth.
Nadia, you're a pediatrician specializing in adolescent medicine. What is the treatment, if I can use that word? What is the treatment then for transgender children? Is it just thank you for sharing, and what does that mean to you? Or are there medical interventions?
So absolutely, there can be medical interventions. When a young person is as young as 5 years old and they're coming to seek help because they have a child who's expressing very gender, at that point, what is most indicated is support, exactly what Linda talked about. So, you know, we should be loving our children and supporting them for who they are. And there are things that can be done at that age in terms of working with the school and community members and family to make sure that they have the support to be called the name that they want to be called, to be able to go to the bathroom that they want to go to and do all of the other things that they perceive in as being part of their gender identity. As young people get older, then we start to think more about what would be the appropriate medical interventions.
So, hormones are these some of the interventions?
Absolutely. So, you know, it's interesting because we hear a lot in the media about the things that adults need for treatment, and including cross-gender hormones and surgeries and things like that. When we're talking about these really young children, what they need is something different. So what happens is, because we don't always know children who are gender nonconforming about who they are going to grow up to be, we want to provide them with treatments and support as we're understanding who they are going to become. So usually the first step in that is that when someone starts to reach puberty, we think about starting medications that may block puberty. And the reason for that is that you can imagine when a young person is transgender and they have the female body parts and they don't identify with those, and they start to go through puberty and they start to develop those things even more that are not a part of the gender that they identify with, that can be extremely traumatizing. So what we want to do at that time is to actually stop them going through puberty by providing them these specific medications. And then over time, as we feel like they are ready to make decisions, and they and their family and the treatment team together are ready to make decisions that would be more permanent, that's when we start to think about things like cross-gender hormones, estrogen, testosterone.
And I'm curious, Linda, whether there are transgender children and perhaps even adolescents they want the body they have. I mean, that they have sort of defined it for themselves. They don't necessarily want a different body.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do see that. And that's a very strong, courageous, resilient way for young people to have made a bridge between their head, their heart, and their body. And it's in the work I do with young people, I talk about external genitalia and internal genitalia. I don't put the other terms on it. And since I'm not a physician, I don't always have to be discussing those things.
Right.
But for young people, I've found, especially when they have very supportive parents who then join in the child's language and acceptance of their body, it's remarkable and it's really, really wonderful. Historically, there was an expectation that if you were truly transgender, you wouldn't want your body parts. What Nadia and I see more and more is children who are growing up in such wonderful, affirming families where their gender is affirmed, that these young people are actually very comfortable in their own skin, especially when provided the opportunity to not go through puberty and have those sex characteristics that would go through puberty and continue emerging just put on neutral.
it's great when parents can be understanding and accepting. I don't know if that's the exception or the rule. And as I said, I'm sure for most parents, you have to struggle with this to some degree. But what about those parents who say, no, you're a boy, no, you're a girl? What happens to that child?
In my experience, those are the children who end up in general mental health practices because they're depressed, because they're anxious. Young people who we get to work with who are in their teens and are coming in sometimes because they've been put out of their homes and are saying, I need to be me, please help. Older teens over 18, we can support in that way. 9 times out of 10, when a child knows that their parents aren't going to be supportive, either because of they've been actively told that or passively told that, young people pick up so much
yes,
on what their parents say about TV or those people or that person. Young people will shut down. And when they shut down the part of themselves that is their true gender, they shut down in many times their heart and their soul. And because of that, we see a lot of these really negative mental health silhouettes. It's the depression, the anxiety, the substance use, the disordered eating, the oppositional defiant disorder.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. When we are talking about transgender children in this hour of Radio Times, that's Linda Hawkins, and also with us is Nadia Dowshin. And they are co-directors of the Gender and Sexuality Development Clinic that's at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, helping us understand what it means to be transgender. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Any questions or comments to join our conversation? I'm Artie Moscowain, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Nadia, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, I just wanted to pick up a little bit on what Linda was saying about what happens when parents don't support. And unfortunately, Linda and I have been in the position to see that too often in our careers. One thing that folks need to know about young people who are transgender, if they're not receiving support from their family and their community and they're distressed by this identity that's different from what people are telling them who they are, these young people are at incredibly high risk for suicide, which is the worst mental health and medical outcome that any of us can think of. Up to 40% of young people who are transgender have tried to commit suicide.
Wow. Because they feel alone, misunderstood, rejected.
Absolutely. I also want to talk about the change in what I've seen in terms of the patients who are coming to us now from what it was when I started doing this work 8 years ago. So my introduction to working with trans youth was when I was doing part of my training in Chicago, and I was working at an LGBT health center similar to Mazzoni here in Philadelphia called Howard Brown there. And my mentor and I, we were the only pediatricians there at the health center. And we saw many young people who were older adolescents and young adults coming in because they were transgender and wanting support and medication, particularly hormone therapy. At that time, the Howard Brown Health Center was the only place in the entire Midwest, this was 8 years ago, that was providing this type of treatment for adults, and nobody was providing this treatment for children.
Interesting.
And so all the young people who were coming to me, they have had, many of them were homeless, many of them had moved away from where they were born because they didn't have the support of their families. As soon as I started seeing one patient there, I suddenly had 50 who were coming to me from 5 and 6 hours away. People have always been out there. And when they haven't received support, there have been a lot of negative health outcomes. Now we're getting to see the other side of that.
Let me get Dawn from South Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Dawn. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I think it's great that you're working with trans kids. I'm transgender myself, but I really don't like the word transgendered. I struggled with that word for about 20 years now. I've done a little bit of activism in the city, some lawsuits, blah, blah, blah. But my point is that when you said the disorder, that we have a sexual disorder, and maybe I didn't hear you clearly, do you feel that gays and lesbians have that same disorder?
I think you might have misheard, Dawn, but I have a question for you. So if you don't like the word transgender, what word do you like?
Absolutely not, ma'am.
I know, but what word do you like?
the gender that I chose, you know, the gender that I am. And I really believe it has to do with, you know, like in the trimester period, I believe it has to do with oxygen.
Okay.
Know,
like, all right. Well, let me.
No, sound too bizarre.
Yeah. Hold on, Dawn, only because we're almost up in a break, and I do want to give Linda a chance to respond. I mean, what we call other people and what they call themselves can mm-hmm. be really loaded.
Yeah, the power of the language of understanding can also historically has been the power of the language of oppression. So giving individuals just like Dawn the right and the power to define themselves, and in settings the individuals get to say, this is how I'd like you to refer to me, and this is the pronoun, and this is the identifier. Dawn was really clear that that's the case. So we are not, even as a mental health specialist or Nadia as a medical provider, we don't get to dictate who someone is. We get to listen and affirm.
And we're almost up in a break here. But do you think there's the sort of hostility against people who don't sort of fit in these neat little categories is because it confuses people? I mean, it confuses the public, which is, who are you? What are you? How am I supposed to behave in front of you?
Well, and adult brains, I always think about how adult brains work. Adult brains like boxes. We all do. We like to know what something will mean if we buy it, if we read it, if we eat it. We want to know, and we want those things to be consistent and clear. And so when somebody is gender variant and gender nonconforming, that starts to challenge a history of thinking, and it's a challenge that should be welcomed in our society. But with the parents that I work with who are very gender binary, there are boys and there are girls, teaching and moving them along is my job, and it's a fun role to have.
Let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. Linda Hawkins, Nadia Dowshin, our guests. We'll take a very short break, get back to our conversation. I see some calls coming in and looking for some comments from our emailers and our tweeters. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. How do you recognize gender nonconformity in a child? What type of help is available, and how do you keep a child safe and gain support from the family, then the community, and probably the school as well? Talking about all of this with Nadia Dowshin and Linda Hawkins. They are co-directors of the Gender and Sexuality Development Clinic at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Part of their practice is working with transgender children and their parents. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. What do you suggest schools do, and perhaps what parents and schools can do together to help a child who is transgender? Nadia, if I can toss that to you first.
Sure. I think it's really a matter of meeting the young person where they're at and making sure that staff are educated and understanding, trying to provide accommodation for the young person to be called the name that they want to be called, to have the pronouns used that they want to use, to have them able to go to a bathroom in a place where they feel safe and comfortable. I think also it's important for schools to support a young person without the rest of the school necessarily knowing if that's what the young person and their family desire.
Meaning?
So in many cases, a young person who is transgender and is wanting to go through a medical transition or a social transition, they may have times where they don't necessarily want everybody else to know what's going on. It may mean that a trusted school counselor or teacher or somebody knows what's going on, but not that the whole school is aware. A lot of times kids will end up doing a medical transition during the summer or between breaks and come back as somebody new. And other people will be doing that transition out in the open over a longer period of time. And so it's a matter of putting all the supports in place that a young person needs.
And I wonder, Linda, I mean, is explaining to school kids, this is what Mary or Johnny are going through, is that really helpful? I mean, kids, you know, kids can be mean. They can be mean to each other.
Kids can be very mean. But also I find that kids can be the most flexible and resilient in their thinking. It's the younger grades where like Nadia said, a teacher understands, the principal understands, some key people understand, and I do these trainings all the time. When a teacher says to a second grade classroom, Jamie is now going to be called Joe, and we're going to say he, and that's consistently reinforced for about 3 days, mm-hmm. those second graders might say, why? How come? And when a teacher says, because, that's what we're going to do.
Because that's what he wants.
That's what he wants, and we're going to follow that. The change of young people's thinking and then their behavior really can happen more quickly. Where I see it being more of a challenge is as young people get older, and in middle school and high school, people are very, very critical. And that's where I'm so thankful that within policies around discrimination, bullying, harassment, gender identity is now included. So we can say, all right, teachers, this is an important thing. You have an 11th grader who identifies this way and identified differently in prior years. When teachers say, oh, I'm not going to do that, mm-hmm. or I'm not going to step up when somebody's making fun of this child in the hallway, there's actually laws and precedent to say, nope, that's not okay anymore. This is now an anti-bullying situation. This is a harassment situation. And because of the strength of families and young trans people, they're saying, I don't get to be picked on anymore. And the law says so.
Let me see what Carol from media has to say. Carol, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I have a 21-year-old female-to-male transgender son. And we've kind of been through all that, and that's going well. But I also have a 14-year-old daughter who has come out a year ago saying that she is non-gender specific or gender queer or non-binary and wants to be referred to as they and them. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of having a hard time with that one.
Why? I'm curious, Carol, why a hard time with that one?
I'm not sure. I think part of it is it seems like a newer thing and we can't find a lot of information on it. And the other part of it is, you know, we're wondering if maybe she's just not emulating her brother and this isn't really how she feels.
I'm glad you called because I'm glad you called because it's obviously an important issue. And then, Linda, let me go back to you. You're the psychologist here and then I'll hear from you, Nadia.
So, Carol, first thing I have to say is congratulations. You obviously have created a parenting style in a family where your children feel very safe coming to you and talking to you about themselves. So I wish we could replicate you in many places, Carol. And I would refer back to what Carol said, which is maybe the 14-year-old is seeing that there's more options than boy or girl or male or female. And we see this a lot with young people who are expanding those definitions that are part of the expansion of our understanding and knowledge around gender. And in this case, I would say, Carol, keep doing a great job of loving and listening to your child. And at 14 years old is a fabulous time of identity development in all directions. So sitting with that and seeing what's available, there is more information coming out in the last couple of years about what's called gender nonconforming and gender non-binary folks that fit a little bit of what Carol described in her child.
So go online, I mean, sort of educate yourself mm-hmm. about what might be going on. Do you suggest therapy? I mean, you don't have to have a problem to be in therapy. You can just be in therapy to try to figure something out.
And as a mental health therapist, I'm a licensed professional counselor, I do say, hey, get somebody else on board who's competent in having conversations with young people because it's an exploration.
Sure.
And you're right. You don't have to have something wrong to see a therapist. And when that therapist can work with the family to say, hey, this is language I'm hearing, I'm understanding, let's keep the kiddo safe, the teen safe, and connected to the family well.
Now, do you want to add anything to that?
Sure. So Linda and I have been seeing a lot more young people recently who would identify themselves as gender non-binary or not fitting into those binary boxes that we're all used to. And, you know, in a way, it's a challenge for us too. These are new things and new ideas that people are talking about, and not necessarily that people haven't been feeling this way for a long time, but that we as medical providers are just starting to recognize that. And when I've seen a number of these young people in my office, a lot of it is talking to them about what's going on in their life, and how we can just support them to be healthy. And this doesn't necessarily mean that there's any medical treatment that needs to happen at all. For example, I've seen some young people who have thought, well, I want to present as more male. I'm born female, but I want to present more as male at this time in my life. And then the next day, I want to present more as female. And
they're adolescents,
yeah,
right?
they're teenagers, and these things are very real to them. Sometimes they also don't understand how the medical treatments may or may not be involved in that. So, for example, you can't just take testosterone one day and then stop taking it the next day. You may have changes that happen that could not be reversed. And so then we sometimes talk about things, maybe you're somebody who's born female and you don't identify with having a period. There are ways that we can stop your period, but not necessarily do things that are irreversible. So there are a lot of options for young people. And I definitely, would encourage Carol to find, anybody in the community,
sure,
a pediatrician who can just be supportive and learn along with you and your family about how to best support your child.
Carol, thanks for the call, and good luck to you as well. We have a tweet from another Carol. She says, in the 1950s, kids were kids. Now people are decorating pink or blue. Before birth, until I was 8, I wanted to be a boy. I mean, and which sort of throws us back into a couple of generations ago, mm-hmm, when things were just so much more fixed, Linda. And you had to sort of live either in these poles or try to fit yourself into these two poles.
And I hear from adults who are transitioning later in life that they wish they were growing up now in a time when there is so much more flexibility. There's not just pink and blue, but there's stripes and polka dots and variations. And folks don't have to define so much of who they are from the get-go. And there's just that opportunity for flexibility. And for many folks who are coming out as transgender later in life, they wish they had that chance.
We have a comment from Robert. How do we greet new people and introduce ourselves in ways that support gender freedom while also not short-circuiting the flow of conversation, our careers, blah, blah, blah? Not to diminish what you're saying there, Robert, but, how do you – we're back to language again. How do you refer he, she? We're all so pronoun centric, I guess. Nadia?
One thing I can tell you about the way that I've changed my practice that I've learned from trans youth, but I think it's helpful for all the patients that I take care of, is when I, walk into the room, I say, "Hello, I'm Dr. Dowshin. What would you like to be called?" And I think that that's different from what people have often done in the past, which is just look at what's on the form in front of them that might have, that gender marker, male or female, and have a name that is the person's legal name. So this gives a chance for a young person to introduce themselves as who they feel they are, and whether that's because they have a very gender expression or they just have a different name that they want to be called.
Is our healthcare system, such as it is, helpful in working with transgender children?
We still have a far way to go, especially when we're thinking about things like electronic medical records, which I know we're all getting more familiar with. Right now there at CHOP, there isn't a place in the medical record where we can have people referred to by their preferred names or preferred pronouns. That's something that other institutions have been working on across the country, and we're hoping to implement soon. So there definitely are ways to make the health system and the medical record system work to support people regardless of their gender identity, but we have a ways to go.
And sort of like race. I mean, now there are many more boxes for race, and people can combine boxes to say, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm. And I want to pull on a word that you said earlier, Marty, which was assumptions. So for the tweet or the email that came in, is leaving your assumptions at the door, and preferably your door at home. So when our eyes make assumptions about who a person is, why are we doing that? If we make an assumption about somebody's gender based on their profession, why are we doing that? What are we imposing on people, especially children and youth, based on what we assume they should be thinking, feeling, and doing? So I encourage folks to check that at the door and ungender their thinking a little bit.
Mm, not always easy to do, because as again, we make these assumptions. And talking with Linda Hawkins and Nadia Dowshin, Linda's a psychologist and Nadia is a pediatrician specializing in adolescent medicine, and they are co-directors of the Gender and Sexuality Development Clinic at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And to join our conversation, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. I see emails coming in, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get Kathy from, looks like, New Jersey to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a 67-year-old transgender woman. Made my transition in 2007. Grew up in the 50s. There was no place for us to go. Yeah. No one to talk to. Very high suicidal rate amongst us. Up until I finally found a therapist that gave me a definition of what was going on with me. I was very suicidal, very angry person, very unsure of myself. But it's good to see that today young people at least have an avenue, and parents are recognizing that a child is a child to be loved, no matter what the child's gender is.
Well, you know what, Kathy? Hold on one second, because first of all, I appreciate your call to Radio Times, and I can see both of my guests are responding, including Linda, responding to what you're saying. Go ahead, Linda. What's on your mind?
Kathy, thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for being brave enough to still be with us. I admire your story and you sharing it here, because of you and your bravery, we're able to do this good work today. The courageous lives like yours have informed many of our professions, mental health and medicine, to step up to the plate and to get smarter. So I just want to say thank you, Kathy.
Mm. I mean, we are making progress on this issue. Yes, Nadia?
Yeah, I think we're hugely making progress because of people like Kathy. And thank you again so much. I think, you know, one of the things that I hear from older transgender folks is just how alone also they have felt for so many years. And I think now that there's more of a consciousness that people can connect online, and one of the things that we're trying to do and starting very soon in our clinic, along with the Mazzoni Clinic as well, is to have a support group for children and their families who are gender nonconforming. And I think that, you know, this will go a huge way to providing that outlet to know somebody else who is like you, who is going through what you are going through, or another parent who's supporting a child in this situation.
It seems like the perfect note to end our conversation. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for your work as well. Nadia Dowshin, thanks for coming into Radio Times. And Linda Hawkins, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And they are co-directors of the Gender and Sexuality Development Clinic at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Nadia Dowshin is a pediatrician specializing in adolescent medicine, and Linda Hawkins is a psychologist. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. You can send us a comment about this hour of the show. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thanks for joining us in this first hour, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.